Monday, April 7th, 2008, Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. Hello, Truth Seekers. It's 7 past the hour. We got a good one for you tonight, folks. Glenn Greenwald's going to be joining us talking about the torture memos. Michael Mukasey's claim that somehow we knew that 9/11 was going to happen, but we did nothing about it. And by we, I mean, of course, the Bush administration. Juan Cole is going to be here. He's going to be talking about General Petraeus. St. Petraeus will be up on the hill tomorrow telling everybody essentially nothing. I mean, is it really relevant? I mean, does anybody really care about this guy's testimony? It is all basically his mission, job number one. Try and reinforce John McCain's belief that we should be in Iraq for 100 years as some type of occupying force. I think if I had to place a bet, I think you're going to hear some whispers about Iran. Remember last time he was up there in September, Joe Lieberman was like, "Please, St. Petraeus, please, please, why don't you tell this august body, the Senate Armed Services Committee, how much you need authority to go and attack Iran?" And even Petraeus at the time was like, "Well, I don't want to get in that." But I don't know. Maybe St. Petraeus is starting to smell VP position. So maybe it's time to start talking about Iran if you're General Petraeus. And Cliff Schechter will be here later in the program. And, wow, he's got a new book out, The Real McCain, and wow. The Sammy Cam is in effect, I should tell you folks, over at samcedarshow.com. And, of course, we're streaming live at novamradio.com. And I don't know if I can even tell you this story about John McCain. Billy, what do you think the chances of me getting suspended from this show? I mean, if I say it now, will I be able to we'll come back from break and Billy will have to get on the microphone and say, Sam's been suspended. He will not be able to finish this show. Apparently, John McCain, and this is straight out of Cliff Schechter's book, and I don't know if it's, you know, it's only relevant. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's actually a couple of different reasons why this is relevant. John McCain's temper is apparently legendary, but it goes beyond. I mean, I grew up, my dad had quite a temper when I was a kid, quite a temper. I never heard anything out of his mouth like this, never. And but we, you get about 6, maybe 7 Republican senators on record saying John McCain, this guy can go psycho on you. I mean, this guy can go postal at the drop of a hat. And why is this an issue? Well, John McCain released his medical records back in 2000. About, I don't know, something like 10,000 pages of them or something like that. Maybe it was just 1,000 pages. But nobody really leafed through these things because he didn't make it very far in the primaries. I mean, you got to remember now, you've just got people releasing their their medical records now. And you basically have two presumptive nominees. John McCain is the obvious Republican nominee, maybe just presumptive. I know a lot of conservatives are hoping that he goes away. And for all intents and purposes, Barack Obama at least from a mathematical perspective, is the presumptive nominee, and they're releasing their medical records. John McCain, though, however, this time around, is not. Now, you've got to ask yourself a question. Why is John McCain not releasing his medical records? Now, we know he released them in 2000, but also at a time where he didn't get much scrutiny in these things. So, has something happened in the past 8 years that makes him afraid of releasing his medical records? Now, there's a lot of, you know, it's well-known fact, John McCain was a prisoner of war during Vietnam. He was tortured. He broke. He cracked. He renounced his country. I would, too. If they tortured me, that's what torture's all about, to elicit false confessions. But maybe there's some post-traumatic stress syndrome going on here. I don't know. But when you hear about a guy who has such rage issues that over half a dozen of his fellow Republican senators have publicly gone on record saying this guy is sort of a nut job. And then you hear this story coming out of Cliff Schechter's book. It's John McCain getting into his wife's face, essentially. Now, remember, John McCain was married once prior to his current wife, Cindy McCain. He was married to a woman who stuck by him, obviously, when he was a prisoner of war. When he came back, she had gotten into a car accident, apparently was somewhat disfigured. He began, according to him, philandering. That's how he met his next wife. So he left his first wife, got hooked up with his next wife, who is a millionaire heiress. I mean, you know, they talked about Teresa Hines. I think Cindy McCain's family puts Teresa Hines to shame in terms of the millions upon millions. Anheuser-Busch, I think. And she set him up. They took him back down to Arizona. He came in there as a carpetbagger, started running for office. That's where he built his career. And this story coming out of The Real McCain by Cliff Schechter, you can order it now. I got links at samcedarshow.com, and Cliff will be here later to tell us more about this. But I'll read a little excerpt of the book. This is, I mean, obviously I can't read the whole thing. I can't read every word here. Because like I say, I don't want to get suspended. I don't even know if I may be in trouble just for reading this thing earlier in the day. Billy, what is Nova M's policy on this? If I read this thing during earlier in the day, would I get suspended for it? I mean, I just, no. All right, because I was on the phone. I just want to make sure. So it's three reporters, apparently, from Arizona, fed this story to Cliff Schechter, who was never reported at the time. Because, of course, back then, press was a little bit different in the way that they would approach these things, I guess. They were too busy hounding Bill Clinton. So in his 1992 Senate bid, McCain was joined on the campaign trail by his wife Cindy, as well as campaign aide Doug Cole and consultant Wes Gullett. We're going to look into those two guys, see if they're lobbyists, because it would be odd for John McCain to surround himself with any campaign advisors who weren't paid lobbyists. But be that as it may. At one point, Cindy playfully twirled McCain's hair and said, "You're getting a little thin up there." Now, Billy, you got a hat on. I'm looking at you on the Sammy cam. I'm looking into the belly of, is that Ian? Now, if your wife, your better half, or whoever it was, just sort of playfully said, "You're getting a little thin up top there," yeah, maybe you get, you know, maybe you get a little bit, you know, maybe it strikes a little chord. I know that when my wife comes up to me and says, "You're getting fat. You got to lose some weight, man. I mean, you're just jiggling around here. It's just ridiculous." I got to admit, I got a little twinge. But I have never responded. I responded like John McCain responded to his wife. The next thing I know, I think I get a frying pan across the head. Or anything. I don't even know if it would be blunt instrument. So McCain's face reddened, and he responded, "At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you..." Yeah, wow. It's a... Well, I don't know if I would call this a biological term. But this is probably the... Well, I've always had a theory that if you ever wanted to walk into a bar and guarantee that you get slapped in the cross the face by every woman you met, this would be the word that you would use. The Brits seem to use it without regard to gender, but I don't think that John McCain is British. I think he's Panamanian. All right, we're going to take a break. It's 17 past. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy.
He's too old to cut the mustard anymore.
Old Man River. Old Man River. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, just on vacation, folks. Mike Malloy is on vacation. It's a pleasure to fill in for him. Mark Maron's going to be filling in for him, I believe, tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken. So John McCain calls his wife, basically calls her a trollop, and then says, "You..." rhymes with runt, I guess is the best way to put that. I mean, I don't even want to go near that thing. Talk about it, is what I'm saying. This is unbelievable. And you can understand why maybe it wasn't reported back in 92. But, it's the rage that comes out when his wife is teasing him just a little bit that I think is really this, you know, maybe it's not a question of Old Man River. Ian, maybe you should be playing Psycho Killer. Suggested by one of our Sammy cameras. I mean, honestly, here's a guy who goes around proud of the fact that he still uses the term gooks. Six of his fellow Republican senators say, "I wouldn't want this guy anywhere near the button." And he says this to his wife. And then the other thing, trollop? He just called his wife a whore. Literally. Specifically saying, you know, you put your makeup on there, you look like some type of streetwalker. He's saying to his wife, which is ironic because he married into this hugely wealthy family, some respects. Somebody help me out here. Billy, can you get on mic? When was the last time you ever heard anybody say the word trollop? I mean, this is in 1992. He's using the word trollop. You look like a trollop.
Same. Sweet. Time I heard fiddlesticks.
Yeah, I guess so. Hello, Betty. Get me Casanova 5432. Unbelievable. Bonaire, John Bonaire, the House Minority Leader. Republican from Ohio the other day, it was quoted as saying that, talking about speculating who might be John McCain's VP, Bonaire said the running mate must be younger than McCain. I wonder if you'll add, without any knowledge as to what the word trollop means. Oh, and he probably should also be someone who doesn't refer to his wife as the C word. To her face when she's teasing him. Somebody who wouldn't be, you know, what they're going to have to do. I think, you know, McCain's running mate is actually going to have to be somebody who's got some real bulk. Because the chances of John McCain going just psycho here and saying, you know, it's time to drop the bomb on Iran. Let's just do it now. Bomb, 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 Iran. Somebody's going to have to be strong enough to be able to tackle this guy before he gets to the suitcase, before he can open up that suitcase and launch the missile strike. Unbelievable. John McCain had a very tough day today, folks. You know, he's getting all ramped up. This is supposed to be John McCain's week, where General Petraeus comes in and says that, the surge was working. And, of course, when General Petraeus says the surge is working or not working, he has to narrow what he's talking about to just being on a security level. Because we all know that when George Bush announced the surge a year and a half ago, the goal of the surge, the agenda, the strategic goal of the surge was to open up political reconciliation. I mean, the surge was just a tactic to fill in the larger strategic goal of building institutions and creating a so-called democracy in Iraq. Now, of course, there's not going to be any democracy. It's just going to be, they just want to make sure that they have a proper strongman dictator. And that has been a miserable failure. And so what John McCain was banking on for the past 3 or 4 months is that General Petraeus is going to come in there and say, everything's peaceful in Baghdad. We finally tamped down the violence. And then, of course, all it takes is Mukhtar al-Sadr to say, you know what, I'm done sitting on the sidelines. And the whole thing explodes. People are dying in the green zone. And they're dying in the green zone, incidentally, maybe with the help of a Republican congressman out of North Carolina. I'll explain that later in the program, but it's reprehensible. These chicken hawks. This guy, McHenry, was down in the green zone trying to make YouTubes of himself as some type of war hero, and he very well may be responsible for the deaths of a couple of U.S. military servicemen by giving the insurgency the coordinates from which to end their to aim their mortar rockets. Billy's looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm telling you, we'll talk about this later in the program. When we come back, Glenn Greenwald, Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. The number 800-989-1480. We'll take your calls later in the hour. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of.
Hi folks, Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy is just on vacation. He is just on vacation for the week. He's enjoying himself. He is in no way suspended. He could walk right back into that studio right this moment. I don't know why he would. He's on vacation. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy. It is 35 after the hour. On the phone, Glenn Greenwald of Salon.com, unclaimed territory there. And, of course, author of Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Myths of Republican Politics. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Good to be here, Sam.
So, Glenn, you know, we spoke yesterday, but I wanted to talk to you again for a couple reasons. You had a great post that talked about the past 2 weeks, the news stories that have come out about this torture, this second torture memo from John Yoo, which in just even saying it that way diminishes just how all-encompassing what it reveals is that this is what that torture was the policy by this administration, and that they knew they had committed war crimes, and they needed some type of cover retroactively. Michael Mukasey going out shilling for telecommunications companies that spied on us to get retroactive amnesty, and dropping a bombshell, if it's true, that the American administration, the Bush administration, was aware of a call from a safe house in Afghanistan to the United States just before the 9/11 attacks. And, of course, you measure these stories and the way they're mentioned in the media to the amount of times that Obama and bowling was mentioned. And you and torture, 102 mentions. Mukasey and 9/11, 73 mentions. The notion that John Yoo has basically come out and said that during a time of war, you don't need to follow the Fourth Amendment if you're the president, 16 mentions. Obama and bowling, 1,000 mentions. Now, before we get into these stories, you also had a post today about Cokie Roberts. Just tell me about that, because I think this goes to the nature of how horrible our corporate media is.
Well, Cokie Roberts was on George Stephanopoulos' show this week and was discussing this responsible plan that 42 Democratic challengers have sponsored to essentially be able to pull out of Iraq in a way that a lot of military commanders they consulted with think is a good thing. And she, Cokie Roberts, declared that this would be a very hard sell to the electorate because, she said, Americans don't want to withdraw. They actually want to win. They prefer to win. They want to stay and win and not withdraw. And this is a common theme that has been repeated over the past 6 to 9 months, really for the whole war, but especially over the past 6 to 9 months, the surge, claiming that Americans are, again, turning in favor of the war, that they don't want to actually leave, and that that's going to help John McCain. There was a big article in the Politico by it. There's all kinds of war advocates and establishment politicians making this claim. It's completely and totally false. I mean, it's just every single poll reveals that Americans overwhelmingly want to leave Iraq, regardless of the conditions there, regardless of whether we've stabilized the country, without concern with whether things are going well on the ground or going poorly on the ground. Unconditional withdrawal, it's between 60% and 65%. So obviously, Cokie Roberts is free to say that we ought to stay forever and to say she agreed with John McCain, which is what she says that we ought to. But to say that Americans agree with that position is just an absolute lie. And they repeat that lie over and over and over again. They take their own view and attribute it to what most Americans think. And oftentimes it's just a complete falsehood.
And when we do hear this lie, more often than not, it's just out of basically Republican operatives. And Cokie Roberts claims to be a journalist.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, you know, there was right after that exchange that I just described, you know, Kateri DeVandenhoevel of The Nation said that Dick Cheney had basically, in an interview, which is true, was asked about the fact that two-thirds of Americans think the war was a mistake, and he basically said, so, you know, I don't care about what American public opinion is. And Cokie Roberts angrily jumped in to defend Dick Cheney. I mean, it was as though she took off her mask and started, you know, playing the role of what she's been all along, which is, you know, sort of a right-wing operative. And, you know, I think the key thing to realize here is that the political establishment and the media establishment has the blood of the Iraq War on their hands. I mean, they're ultimately the ones who supported it and who enabled it. And so they have as much of an interest as George Bush himself does and John McCain does in trying to depict the war as a success and as popular with the American people, because they're afraid of what accountability they would have to face if the truth is out. And I think that's why the right wing is able so easily to manipulate them, because they were the leading war supporters and want Americans to think that the war has gone well and that people agree with them.
And so, I mean, what is, you know, what I can't understand, I mean, I guess this is their only option. I mean, if you were one of these bloodthirsty war hawks and you got it completely wrong, I guess one option is to say I was wrong and begin to tell the truth about the war and its failure and the occupation. I mean, it's more accurately at this point, I think, called an occupation. But they can't do that. Why? Because they lose their place within the establishment, or
I think it's a little bit more of a general point. It actually relates to the first point you raised about all those other stories about torture and the suspension of the Fourth Amendment being ignored. The reality is that there's political crises in America. I mean, if you look at polls, it's extraordinary. You know, 8 out of 10 Americans think that the government is essentially doing the wrong thing. The country is headed in the wrong direction. There's extreme amounts of political disillusionment with the political establishment in Washington. And these people in the establishment press, like Hopi Roberts, have been in Washington all their lives. That's where their sense of self-esteem and their identity is situated. Their colleagues are all political operatives and political officials in the establishment. And so they identify sort of as members of this royal court. And their instinct is to defend and glorify it because that's they're members of that. And they've supported it all along. And so they just instinctively want to sort of find a way to keep at bay the severe disillusionment in the United States, the sense that something has really gone wrong with the political establishment of which they're a part. I think that's why they are so, you know, eager to propagandize on its behalf.
And there's really no end game. It's really just keep staving it off. I mean, it's like Henry Kissinger not being able to go to certain, you know, fly into certain countries, I guess. I'm just going to, you know, put a couple of countries on a list that I shouldn't land in, or I'm going to get arrested or something.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's why you know, there was such an obsession with the whole Jeremiah Wright matter and things like, is Obama smoking again, and is he a good bowler, and things, you know, surrounding Hillary Clinton as well, just sort of these petty issues. I mean, these are political figures who ought to be criticized and scrutinized like anybody else on substantive grounds. That isn't what they do. And so, you know, they're petrified of any real examination about what's been going on in this country. I mean, they're at the highest levels of our government. The evidence is conclusive that they're war criminals in every sense of the word. I mean, they have violated the principles of the Nuremberg trials with aggressive war. And yet our election this year, if they have their way, is going to be about everything other than that. It's going to be about, you know, petty personality attacks and gossip of the type that Matt Drudge pioneered. That's how our press functions, and that's the way that they keep the American public away from thinking about what has really been going on in this country, things about of which they are the authors.
Yeah, let's talk about this notion that we do have an administration, and I think, you know, I don't think there's ever been a more clear, more direct line, more documented evidence of the fact that George Bush and the Bush administration and the whole lot of them are, in fact, war criminals for their systematic plan to torture. Tell us about this. We know that there was a U memo that was declassified, I guess it was about a year ago now, that basically said that torture isn't torture unless it causes bodily organs to fail or causes death. And now there's a much more extensive torture memo that was written March 14th, 2003, that has just been declassified. Tell us about that memo.
Well, the memo is gruesome in the detail that it goes into as far as what the president is authorized to order. I mean, it talks about things like pouring acid on skin and gouging out eyes. I mean, just a very psychopathic mind produced this memorandum, and it just happened to be the person who was writing the official legal position of the executive branch of the government of the United States. It elaborated on the fact that torture is not torture unless it reaches this absurdly high level of violence, something that no international tribunal or even venue in American law has ever recognized. Beyond that, it also said that the president is basically omnipotent when it comes to all matters of national security, that even if U.S. soldiers, while interrogating someone, torture them in violation of the law, that the president could invoke his constitutional authority as commander-in-chief to argue that they ought not be subjected to criminal prosecution, even though they have broken numerous laws, committed numerous felonies, that the president has the right to shield them from all laws, domestic laws and international treaty obligations as well, like the Geneva Convention. And so that's a picture of United States that basically is an exact replica of every tyranny, of every dictatorship that we've ever accused of committing war crimes and have tried and prosecuted for war crimes. I mean, the idea that we can torture people in detention, and the president has the authority to authorize people to act outside of the parameters of all of our laws is hideous. And yet, it wasn't just John Yoo. I mean, he was acting at the behest of David Addington, you know, Dick Cheney's top lawyer in Alberta, Gonzalez, George Bush's top lawyer, at the highest levels of our government, It was an attempt to create a legal framework to first authorize all kinds of illegal torture, and then to provide a legal shield for those people who had already done so, even before that, so that they would not be subjected to legal jeopardy either.
All right, we're talking to Glenn Greenwald. He is the blogger at Unclaimed Territory at Salon.com. He's the author of Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics. We've got to take a break. Glenn, can you hang with us on the other side? Because I think the point that people have to understand here is that this, like you say, is not simply a memo. This was the policy. In fact, there's a lot of reason to believe that the memo was written to justify the policy that was already in place. And we'll also talk about not just this torture memo, this torture policy that was in fact acted out. We all know this now. We'll also talk about Michael Mukasey's claim that somehow the Bush administration knew about 9/11 before it happened. We're going to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. We'll be right back.
I just missed our President George. I'm going to Disneyland. Came with their sabers and guns, and they raped and they slaughtered until they were done. They hacked and they killed and left no one alive. Then they brought in the slaves they allowed to survive. Welcome to the new world, you could hear the men say, as they sat on the shores of Guantanamo Bay.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Micah Malloy on NOVAM Radio. On the phone, Glenn Greenwald, blogger at Salon.com and author of Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics. You can find a link at SamCedarShow.com right now to purchase that book. You can pre-order it. So, Glenn, we're talking about the John Yoo memo, which really was, in some respects, a way to justify the policy that was already in place for this torture, yes?
Right. I mean, there was already a memo, as you said, that justified torture, and they started to become concerned as Abu Ghraib and other controversies started bubbling up, that would lead to legal jeopardy for high Bush officials. And this memo was basically a way to provide legal defense, legal protection to prevent that from happening.
Now, I want to touch on something else that you've been writing about in the past week, and that is Michael Mukasey's claim in the context of defending retroactive immunity for telecommunications companies. He said, and I have the quote right here, "We knew that there had been a call from some place that was known to be a safe house in Afghanistan, and we knew that it came to the United States. We didn't know precisely where it went. You've got 3,000 people who went to work that day and didn't come home to show for that." He actually started crying a little bit at the end of that sentence. But what you, and I didn't see anybody else pick this out, really, Glenn, I got to tell you, to my chagrin that we have this corporate media that we have, you picked this out and said, wait a second, why doesn't the 9/11 Commission know about what Michael Mukasey is claiming here? And you actually spoke to Philip Zelikow. Tell us what your feeling is about this claim.
Well, right, and he was giving a speech where, as you said, he was arguing for telecom immunity and also demanding that the president be given vast, broad, new warrantless eavesdropping powers. And his point was, look, there was this call that came in from an Afghan safe house that we knew about prior to 9/11 into the United States, but that we didn't investigate it because, in essence, these bad civil liberties and constitutional rights prevented us from doing so. And that's why we need to get rid of these civil liberties and safeguards because, look, we have 3,000 people dead to show for it. Now, this idea that there was some call that came from an Afghan safe house into the United States prior to 9/11 that the Bush administration knew about is something that has never before been mentioned by anybody in any public record. It's not in the 9/11 Commission report. It's not in the joint inquiry that the congressional committees did into 9/11 Commission. So one of two things was true. Either Mukasey had revealed an extraordinary fact about the Bush administration's criminal negligence in failing to eavesdrop on this call even though they had every authority that they would have needed to do so under the law. Or he's just making that up. He just lied in order to create a dramatic example of what happens if we keep safeguards on the government's eavesdropping power in place. And as you say, I spoke with the executive director, Philip Zelikow, who said that he had no idea what Mukasey was talking about. He's the executive director of the 9/11 Commission report. One would think he would know about that call if it really happened. And then the day after, and you know, Keith Olbermann did end up doing a couple segments on it, but he's the only one. And the next day, John Conyers, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, wrote a letter to Mukasey, signed by a couple of other congressmen, saying, you know, you made this extraordinary claim that there was this call that could have prevented the 9/11 attack coming from an Afghan safe house. Nobody's ever heard of this call before. The 9/11 Commission didn't mention it. It's not in our congressional report. But did you just make this up? And if not, you know, describe this further. What is it that you're talking about? Because it's fairly extraordinary. I think it's clear that Mukasey was just lying, that he just made up something that didn't happen in order to help this dramatic, tearful plea that he was making for the Senate bill that is sponsored by Jay Rockefeller to be passed that would give the president huge new warrantless eavesdropping powers and was trying to exploit the emotions of the 9/11 attack to justify that.
Well, I got to say, kudos to those members of the Judiciary Committee who signed on to this bill in the House and to John Conyers, because this is going to this issue is probably going to prevent a bill coming out of the House now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the only good thing about their serial lying and about these new revelations constantly is they're abusing their surveillance powers, and there's constantly new revelations, is that that should at least stiffen the resolve a little bit further of the House to stand firm in their position that they're not going to give the telecoms immunity and they're not going to pass a new warrantless eavesdropping bill. I think these kind of incidents kind of anger them just a little bit more, and that's a good thing, and I agree. John Conyers did a great job in signing that letter.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. I mean, the concept that Michael Mukasey, the chief law enforcement officer of the entire country, could get up there and just present such a bald-faced lie, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm being naive. But I wish someone had written a book about how huge of hypocrites these are. Toppling the myths.
I know. We really need that book.
Toppling the big myths of Republican politics, like the one that Glenn Greenwald has written that you can link to at samcedarshow.com. Glenn, thanks for joining us. Number's 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. I will take your calls on the other side. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. I am sorry, folks. 6 past the hour. I can't stop laughing. there's a video out there. You can find it on Talking Points Memo or crooksandliars.com. And we've actually posted the YouTube at samcedarshow.com. Senator David Vitter, Republican from Louisiana, you'll remember him. He was the one who apparently got ensnared in a prostitution scandal. And apparently the D.C. madam that he was involved with, to some extent, I guess, her case is coming up. And there's talk that Senator Vitter may be subpoenaed to testify. And there is a video of him being questioned about it at a function, I guess it's down in Louisiana somewhere by a local CBS affiliate. And he answers the question, and then he's obviously a little bit thrown off. He's obviously a little bit nervous about this thing. He gets into his car, which looks like some type of Honda Civic or something, and proceeds to drive it into a some type of pole. And he it rips apart the fender. It lifted the car off the ground. And so we're thinking that maybe Billy suggested that what we should do is probably start up a fund to repair the car. But if we do start this fund to repair David Vitter's car, David Vitter would, of course, have to promise not to spend the money on prostitutes or trollops, as John McCain would call them if they were his wife, and spend it on fixing the car. So, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's something we'll do. Number is 800-989-1480. Like I say, Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy is just on vacation. Scouts honor here. Coming up later in the program, we'll be talking to Professor Juan Cole, anticipating the presence of St. Petreus on the Hill tomorrow. He'll be up in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee in the Senate, like I say. And poor John McCain. And, Ian, I'm going to want clip number 25 in just a moment, if you will. Poor John McCain. This happened to him 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, where he gets out there to make his major speech about how the surge is working. My friends, the surge is working. People in Washington don't want this occupation to last, this bloody occupation, for hundreds of years, my friends. And today, he, of course, went out anticipating St. Petreus showing up. Remember, this is John McCain's entire presidential platform, that we can occupy Iraq for 100 years as long as just Iraqis are dying. It doesn't really quite answer the question of how can there be fighting and us occupying this country for 100 years and we not involved in it. It doesn't answer the question of who's going to pay the $12 billion a month. $12 billion a month, 12 months out of the year, $144 billion, 100 years. Sorry, folks. Stumped. So here's John McCain giving his speech, and wouldn't you know it, it turns out that Iraq is not behaving. This is number 25.
Sectarian violence in Iraq was spiraling out of control. Life had become a struggle for survival. And a full-scale civil war seemed almost unavoidable. Al-Qaeda was on the offensive. Entire Iraqi provinces were under the control of extremists and were deemed all but lost. Faced with the prospect of defeat, we had two fundamental choices. We could retreat from Iraq and accept the horrible consequences of our defeat, or we could change strategies and try to turn things around. It was, I believe, a critical moment in our nation's history and a time of testing for our nation's political leadership. In the year that has passed, our nation showed its strength.
And speaking of Iraq, we do have breaking news out of Iraq, where at least four mortars have been fired into the heavily fortified green zone today. It's unclear at this time if there are casualties or any major damage. Now, the news comes just a day after five U.S. soldiers were killed in Iraq, two again inside that green zone. The latest violence has been triggered by Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's crackdown in Basra last month. Uprisings have been staged throughout Baghdad and southern Iraq.
An update now on the story that we called the prosecution of Governor Siegelman.
Stop your sound. So there you have it, folks. John McCain giving his "The Surge is Working" speech. That moment when I said we should try and extend our presence in Iraq for 100 years. And he is cut off in the middle of his "Surge is Working" speech. That I am like the greatest generation for insisting upon continual bloody occupation until we have generations upon generations that will die. In the middle of that speech. In the middle of that speech. The horror of Iraq intrudes. So sorry, John McCain. So sorry that you cannot spew your lies without reality literally, literally interrupting you like a news flash. I'll tell you something, folks. You know, people have been worried about this contentious Democratic primary. And I'm not one of those people who actually thinks that it's helped at this point. I think we've passed that point where it's helped. I know there's record number of registrations and new registrations. I'm pretty convinced we would have those anyways. All that said, the notion that you have two Democratic candidates beating up on each other on a daily basis, and John McCain isn't 20 points ahead in the polls right now, should tell you something. This man, this potentially psychopathic man, just based upon his reactions to those people he supposedly likes, this man who says he knows nothing about economics at a time when we are heading into a period of a total economic crap storm, if you will, this man who's banked his entire presidential run on a horribly, horribly unpopular, bloody occupation that is simply not sustainable, whether you talk to the American public or whether you talk to the American military. He's going to lose. He cannot win. I'm not saying you should be overconfident. I'm not saying that you shouldn't make phone calls. I'm not saying that you shouldn't donate to your candidates. But the man is deluded, both in a general sense and maybe in a clinical sense. When we come back, we'll be talking to Professor Juan Cole from University of Michigan, blogging at Informed Comment. He'll give us a sense of what's going on the ground right now, who the different players are. It's going to come to a shock to conservatives, and you can give me a call about this, 800-989-1480. But they're not all Islamo-fascists. We're not fighting the boogeymen over there. We're going to take a break. It is 15 past the hour. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Promise we'll get to your calls shortly.
Ship out your daughters and ship out your sons. They won't return till the battle is won. War for the righteous and war for the good. War for the children in your neighborhood. Bring home the victory, bring home the bride. Bring home the bodies of soldiers who've died. But it's not enough for the villains to fall. Bring home the money to pay for it all.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Just on vacation. On the phone, Professor Juan Cole. Blogs at informedcomment.com. Author of Napoleon's Egypt. He is a professor of history at University of Michigan. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Thank you, Sam.
So tomorrow, General Petraeus is going to go up in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee. There's been reports that he's going to be talking about the problem of Iranian fighters that the Americans, when they were fighting along with the Iraqi government made up of the Dawa Party and the Supreme Council of Islamic Revolution, when they were fighting the Sadrists and the Mehdi Army in Basra, that they were supposedly fighting Iranians. Can you talk about the validity of that claim?
Well, of course, I have no way of knowing what's going on the ground in Basra. But then, to tell you the truth, I very much doubt that that either the British or the American military has very good intelligence about the slums of Basra either. I don't find it plausible. that Iranian military was fighting alongside the Mahdi army in Basra. I wouldn't want to be in a position of denying that there may have been Iranians in the ranks of the Mahdi army. There are lots of Iranians in Iraq. They come on pilgrimage, thousands of them, even probably a million a year. So there are people hanging around. They get caught up in things. But regular Iranian military or Iranian Revolutionary Guards sent to support the slum kids of Basra, I don't think so.
So now tell me, it has a particular irony, too, because to the extent that there is... just outline for us, there are three major players in the Iraqi government, the Dawa Party, the Supreme Council of Islamic Revolution and their Barter Brigades, and Mukhtar al-Sadr's also has some seats in Parliament and his Mehdi army. Just for the sake of our audience, so that when Petraeus starts talking tomorrow, people have a sense of who the different players are. Just give us a sense of who is most aligned with Iran and in what ways.
Well, the group that's most aligned with Iran is the Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq, headed by Abdulaziz al-Hakim, which is the power behind the al-Maliki throne. If you want to talk about al-Maliki being prime minister with seats in parliament, you're really talking about his own Dawa party, which is small. But the big party behind him is the Islamic Supreme Council. They were formed in Tehran in 1982 at the instance of Ayatollah Khomeini, and their buttercore paramilitary was trained by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. Some say it's still on their payroll to some extent. So these are the Iranian pro-Iranian guys are our allies, are the central government of Iraq. Sadr, Muqtada Sadr, and the group that he leads, these are poor, poor Iraqis in the slummy areas who some of them displaced from marshes and some of them working class, others just unemployed youth. And they tend to be Iraqi nationalists. They want a strong central government. They don't like Persian influence on Iraqi affairs. And although there may be elements of them that have hooked up with the Iranians, on the whole and by and large, they're much less close to Iran than are the American allies.
What are the rumors of Mukhtar al-Sadr hiding out in Iran that we're hearing, of course, from right-wing talkers?
Well, it's not clear where Mukhtar al-Sadr is exactly, and he may go across to Iran. But, you know, so does Abdulaziz al-Hakim, and his son Ammar was caught at the border going back and forth without a visa. So all of these Shiite leaders visit Iran and go back and forth. It doesn't mean anything. The point is that Muqtada Sadr is a black sheep in Iran. The supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, clearly doesn't approve of him, thinks he's a loose cannon. And he doesn't have that great relations to most of the sections of the Iranian government.
So help me understand why we're supporting, we are literally supporting with military might and through every means possible, the group that is also supported by Iran, yet at the same time we claim Iran is the biggest problem in Iraq. What is your sense of the American agenda here?
Well, it so happens that the pro-Iranian forces in Iraq are also pro-American, and they don't see a contradiction. So they got help from Iran. They get help from the United States. They took over Iraq. They would like to carve up Iraq into three regions and kind of have a very loose federal government. So you get a big Shiite region in the south with control of the lion's share of Iraqi petroleum. So these political forces that are close to Iran are also close to Bush, and they're trying to get what they can get.
They're attacking, essentially the Maliki government is attacking Basra because they want to make sure that they're in a position to gain those riches down from the south.
Absolutely right. If you don't have Basra, you don't have anything. The Rumaila oil fields are in that province. That's where the majority of Iraqi petroleum is pumped from. And there's more where that came from if it can be developed. And so the Islamic Supreme Council of Al-Hakim, which is close to Iran, also has this scheme of making a Shiite province and sort of monopolizing Iraq's oil wealth.
Professor Juan Cole, thank you so much for this primer as we listen to General Petraeus tomorrow with a lot of expectation that he's going to be talking about Iran, maybe as much as Iraq. Folks, check out the professor's blog at Informed Comment at juancole.com. We're going to take a break. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing. Mike Malloy will be right back. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy, who is on vacation. Ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, the number here, 800-989-1480, streaming live at novamradio.com. Sammy Cam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. You can actually look into the bowels of Nova M Radio. And Ian and Billy, I can't tell what you're saying there, Billy, but Billy's just like, no, don't look. It's not a pretty picture, I got to say, folks. It's certainly not as pretty as having Lauren. A lot of people on the Sammy Cam complained about that. Again, the number's 800-989-1480. Let's go to Galen listening on the stream in Seaside, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Galen.
Sam Cedar.
Galen.
I can't believe it.
an
honor to talk to you.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you, sir.
But I'm a little worried about you, Sam.
Really?
Everywhere you show up, suddenly, the talk show hosts, they're just gone.
That's right. I have the Midas touch.
So somehow they disappear. You know, you're working one day a week. All of a sudden, you're working eight.
Yes.
Come on. Randy Rhodes gets suspended for what she said? No way. And Malloy taking a vacation? The man loves the show.
That's right. That's right. No, I work in mysterious ways, Galen.
I'm getting a little worried about this, Sam.
It's just a matter of where I feel most comfortable at any given point. So, yes, everyone on the dial should be very, very worried.
Sam, you're like Negroponte and Death Squads or General Miller and Torture.
Yes, yes.
What can I say?
I appreciate the comment, Galen. I'm not sure how to react to it, but I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. I haven't seen Garofalo lately.
Well, she actually joined me the other day while I was filling in for Randy. By surprise, she ended up on my phone.
That's good to know.
She is going to get. She is gearing up to. To essentially torture conservatives by showing up on the program 24.
Fantastic.
Which, incidentally, Galen, in this new story from Vanity Fair called Green Light by a guy named Philip Sands, if you have the opportunity to Google this and check it out.
Okay.
It is a story about, and he wrote this actually before the second torture, you torture memo came out.
Ooh.
And he had heard the outlines of this memo, but essentially he lays it all out there, folks. He lays it out there in such a way that it's very clear that this was a systematic plan to torture, that people like Rumsfeld and Addington and Stephen Hayes and you and Gonzalez went down to Guantanamo to oversee and find out how the torture regime was going forward in Guantanamo Bay. But I don't know if this is the most disturbing thing, but one of the most disturbing things out of it is that the actual torturers, the people who are in charge of so-called interrogating these people, because they had just been, they had no training in how to torture, because it had been illegal in this country until the Bush regime came in. They had no idea how to torture, so when they got these directives from on high to basically take the gloves off, do whatever you can or whatever you want. They actually started watching the program 24 to get ideas on what to do to their prisoners.
Oh, good Lord.
It's an amazing piece, and check it out. It's in Vanity Fair, and one of these days, when I decide to, whenever I decide I want to fill in for somebody, I will do so, and I will hopefully be talking to Philippe Sands. Apparently, he's in Britain, Great Britain, so a little bit difficult to get in touch with him. But let's go to Arlene in Tarzana, listening on KTLK. Welcome to the program, Arlene.
Hi. Well, I'm back to McCain and the Republicans in general. They have, they seem to have the lead in potty mouth. And I'll give you a few of McCain's.
Please. Now be careful here, Arlene.
Well, I'll start easy.
Well, I know, but even when it starts getting rough, you got to, you obviously can't use that language.
No, I'll refine it.
Okay, I appreciate
it. Okay. Shut up. This is what McCain says to Senator Edward Kennedy.
Right.
Okay. Effing jerk. This is what he says to Charles Grassley.
Republican.
Yes. And F you, he says to John Cornyn.
Republican.
Yes. And, well, he tells a very nasty joke about Hillary Clinton when she was 16.
And he also is famous for telling a joke about Chelsea Clinton, implying that Janet Reno was his her father or something.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Why is Chelsea Clinton so ugly? Because...
Yeah, we don't need to repeat the joke, but I get it. I mean, well, you know, Arlene, it's not so much... Look, I frankly, you know, it's not the language that scares me about John McCain. It is the anger that's behind the language.
That's right. Look,
I don't know anybody who doesn't cuss. I don't. I mean, my 2.5-year-old daughter does not cuss.
But here's another one.
What?
Here's the reason why he wants to kill somebody. This is related by his aide, Jay Smith. He wants to kill Richard Kimball, who was his opponent in 1986. Why does he want to kill him? Because Kimball revealed that McCain had used a riser to stand
well, you know,
behind
what's also
his podium.
That's funny. You know, Arlene...
he wants to kill him for that.
I'll tell you, Arlene, I appreciate the phone call. I got to tell you that it's clear the guy is incredibly vain. You know, he has this sort of self-effacing sense of humor about himself. But, I mean, and we're going to be talking to Cliff Schechter about this later in the program. But when Cindy McCain playfully twirled McCain's hair and said, "You're getting a little thin up there," he turns to her. I mean, I don't even want to say it's disturbing. At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you rhymes with aunt, sort of. Let's go to Don, listening on Sirius Radio in Largo, Florida. Welcome to the program, Don. Don, are you there?
This is Don from Largo. Am I on the air?
Yeah, you're on the air, Don. How are you?
I think there's too much politics that leaves out the regular people who work for a living, and I think there ought to be an internet, TV, and radio signal for U.S. Congress, U.S. President, U.S. Senate. It's, you know, I think that's why this middle class has been destroyed, because we're not represented in the political structure.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Don, and certainly I think over the past 25 years, the Democratic Party has shifted too far away from the concerns of labor and of the middle class, and has become, in many respects, too corporatist. Maybe I'm deluding myself a little bit, and maybe I am a little bit, but I like to think that influence is... on the wane, but maybe I'm deluding myself.
Well, you got these people who took like $20 million last month and $40 million last month. And, you know, what Randy Rhodes called somebody a sexual term. And difference between a political one and the one on the street is the one on the street does something directly for someone for pleasure, and the political one does it to somebody else, and it doesn't give the other person pleasure.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. That's a good point, Don. But I will say this about the fundraising, and I appreciate the phone call, buddy. You know, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they raised a tremendous amount of money online in small donations. And why is this important? Well, this is important because it is diminishing the influence of the corporate interests. Is it the end-all, be-all? No. But is it a start? Yes. When you compare this to McCain's pathetic fundraising, and it's not just that his fundraising is pathetic. I mean, he's not made. I mean, the dollar amount. The two Democrats combined, I think, have raised on a monthly basis anywhere from like four to five times the amount that John McCain, the presumptive nominee, is raising. Incidentally, he's raising this money. John McCain is, but he's also breaking campaign finance laws. He opted into the Federal Elections Commission's matching funds program and has overspent the limit and has never been released from that certification that he received. And he used that certification as collateral for a loan, used that certification to bypass getting signatures in states to get on ballots. He used it like real money. So John McCain, in March, he raised about $15 million, his best month since 2007. $11 million came from a spurt in the campaign's high-dollar fundraising. $4 million was raised through direct mail and internet efforts. In other words, when he raises all this money in high-dollar fundraising, that means that everybody's tapped out. They can't put any more into his campaign. $4 million online? That's almost less than I get to fill in for Michael Malloy when he is on vacation, like today. Number's 800-989-1480. I do welcome calls from conservatives. I'm always fascinated by what is or is not happening in your mind at any given point. Sam Cedar in for the great Mike Malloy on vacation. Malloy's on vacation. 45 after the hour. I'll be right back after this. Back, Sam Cedar in for a vacationing Mike Malloy, 50 past the hour. Nova M Radio, streaming live at NovaMRadio.com. Sammy Cam is in effect at SamCedarShow.com. Let's go to the phones. Ian, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in St. Louis Obispo, California.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
All right, not too bad. I'm a conservative. And I just want to know what happened to the Constitution. I mean, how come our government isn't following it? And the ideas that our founding fathers set up that our debt would be paid off in a reasonable time.
Well, I'll tell you why, Ian. My first reaction is it's because conservatives supported George Bush in such record numbers in 2000 and 2004. And he has trampled all over the Constitution.
No, I agree with you on that, but it just... You're talking about Obama and Hillary here, and they go even further away from the Constitution. I mean,
Wait a second, Ian. Barack Obama is a constitutional scholar. You realize that, right? You realize he's actually a professor of constitutional law.
and he graduated top of his class from Harvard. I understand that. However, but the reason why we rebelled from England was for taxes and representation. I mean, the Stamp Act, the Boston Tea Party, those would be a cakewalk compared to the regulations and taxes we have now.
Well, the point is with the Boston Tea Party is that there wasn't representation. It wasn't the problem with taxes per se. It was the relationship with the government.
Yeah, and if you were to take those taxes back then and equivalent that into today's dollars, that'd be $7 trillion they were taxing us by.
Yeah, but Ian, the point is not that our government was against taxes. You know, the point was that, in fact, there was no real United States. I mean, there was no Constitution when the Tea Party happened. But the problem is that they were being taxed without any representation, without any means as to say how this was going to be spent.
I completely understand. Then what about the Articles of Confederation, where the founding fathers try to set a small central federal government? That was the whole idea. Let people at the local level decide what's best for them, not people in Washington.
So are you suggesting that today our government is the primary document that essentially every law emanates from is the Articles of the Confederacy? I mean, look,
no,
we have a Constitution. Ian, we have a Constitution.
Yeah.
We have a constitution. I mean, if you want to argue that there shouldn't be taxes, you know, that's certainly you're right. But the fact of the matter is there are taxes, and they are there to promote principles that are laid out in the Constitution.
Yes, but no. What I'm saying is we have too big of a federal government, and we need to let people at the local level. Obama and Hillary's idea is that big government, big brother could solve everything. You know,
well, no, I don't think that's accurate, Ian. I mean, you have a hostility towards the federal government, which I think is unfounded. I mean, listen, I tell you what the federal government can do if it's run properly. If it's not run by people who hate government, it can save lives in the wake of an emergency. It can promote the general welfare. You're familiar with that term in the Constitution, yes?
Yes, but at what cost? Taken away from people who have worked for it? I mean, what happened?
Well, I mean, listen, Ian, you know, here's the bottom line. I mean, you're going to have to grow up a little bit. You have to pay your dues. You know, I mean, you want to tell me there shouldn't be taxes?
I never said that. I think we're being overtaxed, though.
Well, I got news for you. You're familiar with the Cato Institute, right? You sound like someone who would be actually very appreciative of the Cato Institute, right?
No, I'm not familiar.
The Cato Institute is a libertarian conservative think tank. Would being a libertarian sort of describe your conservative ilk?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cato Institute, very famous libertarian think tank. And what the chair of the Cato Institute found, a guy named William Nickerson, and I want you to look this up. I think he wrote a piece in the Atlantic Monthly some time ago.
I will look it up.
What he found is that when you cut taxes to the level that George Bush has cut taxes, that it actually promotes the growth of government. You remember when Ronald Reagan says the way I get a teenager to stop spending money is I cut his allowance. Well, the problem is, Ian, is that it doesn't work in practice because that teenager has a credit card. And all the conservatives in this country who supported George Bush, which is just about 99% of them, basically allowed this government to cut taxes and basically provide all the government services that they know people want from government. I mean, I'm sorry to tell you this, Ian, but if you look around to the left and you look around to the right, all those people want government to help them with their lives. In fact, that's why some would argue that we have banded together in societies. And yes, I understand when there was 10,000 people living in America, you could actually run things slightly different. But you are aware that there is a lot more people here now.
360 million.
Right. That's significantly more than 100,000.
Then what about the debt? What are we going to do about that?
Well, I'll tell you what we got to do. From my perspective, I would like to see military cuts. Because John McCain can talk about his cutting pork all he wants. You're going to save $18 billion a year. His tax cuts alone increased the deficit by $230 billion a year. And this is according to the Wall Street Journal. What I would like to see is cut our military spending. Waste and fraud and abuse, according to the Government Accountability Agency, just came out with a report, accounts for $295 billion. That's just the fraud and the waste.
We got to
cut back on our military obligations. I appreciate the call, Ian. We don't need a military that is twice the size of all the world's rest. You remember that hippie Dwight Eisenhower? That long-haired, actually bald hippie. Actually not so much a hippie. Who warned us of the military-industrial complex. He actually left out the words congressional because he thought it was too sloppy. But that's the real problem there. So demand good government, Ian. And you will see that good government means fiscal responsibility. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, 800-998-1480. Back, Sam Cedar in for a vacationing Mike Malloy. It is 6 past the hour. I want to thank Nova M for the opportunity to sit in for the great Mike Malloy. USA Today reports the percentage of recruits requiring a waiver to join the Army because of a criminal record or other past misconduct has more than doubled since 2004. Our military is under incredible stress and duress, ladies and gentlemen. And it's only going to get worse with a guy like John McCain. 100 years occupation in Iraq. He's fine with it. He won't be around for it. None of us will, I guess. National average price for gasoline jumped 5 cents in the past 2 weeks, according to the Lundberg survey. I don't even know what the percentage of it has increased under this Republican rule. Meanwhile, Army leaders are expressing increased alarm about the mental health of soldiers who would be sent back to the front again and again under plans that call for troop numbers to be sustained at high levels in Iraq for this year and beyond. 27% of non-commissioned officers on their third or fourth tour exhibited symptoms commonly referred to as post-traumatic stress disorders. I just wonder if this is basically John McCain's plan. Maybe he's got PTSD and he wants everybody else to get it too. Have them all refer to their wives as trollops. And Cliff Schechter will be here later in the program, folks. If you haven't gone, you can go directly to Powell's, or you can go to Amazon, or you can go to samcedarshow.com for a link. And ordered The Real McCain by Cliff Schechter. Folks, this is the type of stuff you got to do. This is the way the message of John McCain is going to get out there. You put Cliff Schechter's book to number one on Amazon, and I can assure you, you're going to be hearing a lot more from this guy. And a lot more about John McCain and his ballistic temper. And who knows what else Cliff has got to share with us. Let's go the phones. Todd in Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Well, how you doing, Todd?
Hi, Sam. I'm good. I wanted to just ask you if you had any advice for sort of us ordinary citizens to thwart this media bias. I mean, is it not watching them? I heard Glenn earlier talking about Cokie Robertson. I saw his column in online today at Salon. And, you know, with John McCain and the whole Hagee controversy, you know, mm-hmm. We didn't hear anywhere near the outrage that we heard about, you know, Reverend Wright, which we still keep hearing about.
Right.
You know, I wrote a letter to the editor of the LA Times, which was published a few months back. You know, but I'm trying to think about other things we can do to kind of get involved to critique the media on a ground-level basis, or grassroots basis.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a good question, Todd. I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, we need more media reform in this country just from a legislative perspective. But until that happens, honestly, and, you know, this may sound self-serving, Because of...
Fubar, America's right-wing nightmare.
Because I got a book. but actually, when guys like Glenn Greenwald and guys like Cliff Schechter, if you go out, every time you buy one of their books, you are increasing the chances that they're going to get on air somewhere and start to permeate this sort of bubble that exists. There's no reason why Cliff Schechter isn't on your TV with the same frequency as 90% of these hacks. It's simply, we have to support those people that are putting this stuff out there. It's incredibly important, and it actually makes a real difference. I mean, you know, I know...
I already ordered Glenn's book.
Well, I mean, and that's very helpful. I mean, honestly, I know for a fact these bookers at these news shows, they look and they see what are the hot books. And then they go and, you know, if Cliff Schechter's book, I don't know if it's up to, and I say Amazon because they have a rating system and that's the one that people go to. I mean, I tend to like to support Powell's because they're more independent. But it does make a difference. It really does make a big difference. And if The Real McCain becomes a number one bestseller, you're going to see Cliff Schechter on all these shows and he is going to bring it. I mean, he is not there. If there's one person I know who will go on one of these shows and not be afraid to talk to the truth, he doesn't care who he's talking to.
Yeah,
it's a guy like Cliff Schechter. And then also, start to pressure your congresspeople in particular to do things about the so-called Telecommunications Reform Act in 96. I mean, this is one of the vestiges.
The Fairness Doctrine?
I personally am in favor of the Fairness Doctrine. It doesn't necessarily help some of my employers' business plans, but so be it. I think this country needs a Fairness Doctrine, and if you're going to be broadcasting over the publicly owned airwaves, then you should have a responsibility to provide them, at the very least, the public, with some measure of balance. This is not as if someone, the private industry, came up with this idea of radio and built this without government subsidies. I mean, the television stations that were on over the air, they were getting a free ride because everybody wanted to help out this new nascent industry called television. Meanwhile, in Japan, they get billions of dollars renting out the television airwaves. We get zero. They owe us. They owe us. Let's go to Robin, listening on Sirius Radio, Fraser Park. Welcome to the program, Robin.
Hey, how's it going, Sam? You're doing a fine, fine job, no matter what that other guy said.
Well, I appreciate it, Robin.
This call is basically for Ian. I heard him a few minutes ago, and I just, oh, man.
Well, this is the libertarian who calls in. I hear from libertarians all the time. I don't want to pay any more taxes. We shouldn't be paying taxes. And, of course, they're talking on telephones that have been basically set up with an infrastructure paid for by taxes. They're driving on roads that have been paid for by taxes. The reason why they don't have diarrhea is because the government makes sure that the water is clean. The reason why they don't have food poisoning when the government is actually run by people who believe in good government is because the government, things like the FDA. The reason why they can have a stock portfolio and trust what they're getting is because of the SEC.
Yeah, but basically, Sam, you can boil this all down to two things. Ian, one, go listen to Tom Hartman's show. It'll give you an education. And two, it's not about me. It's about we, the people.
Yep. That's well said. I appreciate the call. I appreciate the call. We've got to take a break. Cliff Schechter is going to be joining us in just a moment. We're going to be talking about his new book, The Real McCain. I'll save the explicit, gory details for Cliff on John McCain's incredible temper. You know, if you abuse your wife like this in front of other people, it's hard for me to imagine it's not going on more than once. These things aren't a one-off, folks. All right, we're going to take a break. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. We'll get to your calls a little later in this hour. We'll be right back after this. Like I say, 14 after. We'll be right back.
Reminds you of Third Reich. Better keep quiet. You don't like, better watch your backs. Cover your tracks because paying for it all with your federal tax. They lie. They lie. They took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lie. They lie. But no matter what they tried, hide, sing and shout, truth wins out.
Everybody knows they lie.
We're back. Sam Suter in for the vacationing. Mike Malloy, it is 19 past the hour on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Cliff Schechter. He blogs over at theagonist.org/Schechter. We got a link on samsutershow.com. But most importantly, he's out with a new book, The Real McCain. And part of that, I guess a story coming from that book is out, and it is, wow. Cliff, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Sam. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And, there's so many different aspects of John McCain that terrify me. The fact that he doesn't know anything about economics. The fact that he doesn't seem to know anything about what's going on in Iraq, short of that he desperately wants to attack Iran. The fact that this guy broke under torture, confessed to being a baby killer. It was a false confession, I presume, but then he goes and he turns around and he votes to allow the CIA to torture. But it's also his temper. This guy, I think, is unbalanced. Tell us the story that's going around from your book, The Real McCain, right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the reason I felt like I had to, report that story, and there'll be some others coming forth, too. But, I mean, this story was certainly, you could probably say the worst one. It's amazing. It was a 1992 campaign trip that he was on. He was on a bus and with some aides of his and the reporters. So he's in front of other people, and he's there with his wife. And at one point, she just sort of starts playfully, not in a nasty way, a way that a husband and wife might joke together, playing with his hair, twirling it, and she says to him that you look like you're getting a little bit thin up there. And, she's laughing, and he suddenly...
My wife does that to me all the time. She says, coincidentally, she says, you look like you're getting a little fat down there, speaking of my body.
Yes.
But, it's what husbands and wives do.
Exactly. I'm fat, I'm lazy, and I frankly deserve all of it, because it's all true. My wife is, of course, correct. So in response to that, he just completely, his face turned red, he lost it. He turned to her and he said, at least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you, something that rhymes with hunt or punt. I'm
right.
Saw that from Wonkat, by the way, who came up with that brilliant little thing today. So, just to say, as someone who's married, to say that to your wife, I'd be sleeping under the bridge tonight, and rightfully so. To say that in front of other people, and it's amazing. It was never reported, I think maybe because it was a different time, partially. I don't know. I don't want to say these guys are necessarily protecting McCain. I think the paper might have been, but it is the early 90s, and Jennifer Flowers was something that was about to happen probably at the time, and other things like that. And obviously they did report on Gary Hart in 88, but I think they still were uncomfortable with this kind of thing.
Well, this is very different. I mean, this talks about a guy's anger and rage and the humiliation of humiliating his wife like that in front of these people, and it sounds like he hates her.
Yeah, I mean, that's the important thing here, and I don't mean to get off on a tangent about why it wasn't reported, I guess. I just wanted to throw that out there, but the truth of the matter is that, I'm not reporting it because he said a dirty word, which I frankly couldn't care less about.
Right.
The manner in which he turned to his wife, he used a very specific word to denigrate her in front of other people in a very sexist and very demeaning way. This fits in with a pattern that we know. My book talks all about a lot of stuff like this, so much of which people already know. Thad Cochran, who's been on the receiving end and said that the thought of McCain as a president sent chills down his spine. Of course, he's endorsed him now and been a good soldier. Chuck Grassley, another Republican that wouldn't speak to McCain for years, Domenici. I mean, he called these people, effing idiots and things like that. I mean, he doesn't get in fights with people and sort of tell them they're wrong. He curses them out. He makes it very personal. He makes it very nasty and very confrontational. And to me, that fits in with everything he does in Iraq and Iran and everywhere else. His whole worldview is confrontation first, discussion later.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who, as late as 2000, And maybe you even know more than this, but he's referring to, he's still using the term gooks. When questioned about it, he says, I'm still going to use it. I don't care. Do you think, you know, they haven't released his medical records this time around, and people are starting to ask questions about this. Do you think, and, you know, of course, his time in as a POW is well documented. He was tortured. Like I say, he admitted on 60 Minutes in 97 that he broke. He gave a false confession, according to him, that he was a baby killer, that he killed innocent women and children. Do you think this guy is suffering from some?
That's a, you know, I mean, obviously that's a really hard thing to say. I mean, I can't even imagine going through 5 years of what he went through, and I've never tried to attack him for that.
No, he shouldn't. No, I'm talking. Look, I mean, my only problem with him, frankly, is that he learned his lesson that torture is there for false confessions, and he turns around and he votes to allow the CIA to torture. That's the problem I have.
No, and you're right, Sam. I didn't mean to imply you're saying that. And of course, you're 100% right on the torture. It just shows this whole, you know, maverick, this whole sort of straight talk thing is nothing but a facade. It's, you know, we don't have enough money. What he does is he's got this side of him, this nasty, I'm always right side, that when he's on a certain side of an issue, he is 100% right, and it could be a personal issue, a political one, but the minute he changes his mind, which he does, not only as often as anybody else, but seemingly more often, then he's also right. Anybody who disagrees with him is wrong. And so when you challenge him, it's personal, and that may be something that's left over from his time in Hanoi. I'm not sure. But certainly, you challenge him on anything. You can make a joke about his thinning hair, or you can tell him that his immigration plan isn't something you're going to vote for. And either way, you don't know if the guy's going to attack you, if he's going to insult you, if he's going to, you know, never talk to you again. I mean, the stability is a real question.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when people were talking about, you know, a presidential temperament. And this isn't like, you know, this doesn't sound like a guy who can bring people together or actually have any type of sort of measured response to things.
No, this is like another version of President Bush, who maybe could actually read My Pet Goat in one sitting.
Right.
You know, it's like Bush with like a college diploma. I mean, that's what you're dealing with here. A guy that speaks slightly more intelligently than Bush, but still doesn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia, and still doesn't know, as you said, anything about the economy, and still is saying Roe versus Wade shouldn't be overturned 1 minute in a 1999 interview, and now wants a life amendment. And, you know, 1 minute is saying that creationism should be taught in science class, the next minute it shouldn't. And 1 minute we shouldn't be in places like Beirut and Somalia and you know, others, and now he's all for going in anywhere, riding a rocket in. I mean, he's always right, and he changes his views all the time. So, and when you disagree, he wants to destroy you. So if you think that's a good president, he'd be a good guy to vote for.
Well, I tell you, Cliff, I am so excited to get your book. It's The Real McCain. There are links all over the place, samcedarshow.com. We have some. You can get it through Powell's or Amazon. But like I was telling the guy called earlier, how do you get some media balance? You buy a book like yours, and you get Cliff Schechter on the air so that he can deliver this message.
Well, let me say thank you so much. I mean, you said a lot of great stuff earlier, Sam, and I'm going to hire you as my agent when the show's over.
I love it. I'm looking for a job after the show's over. Are you kidding?
Thank you to everybody, because the book went, you know, way up today, and that's due to everybody out there. So.
Got to run. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Be right back. Take your calls. We are back. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy, 34 past the hour. The number is 800-989-1480. Let's go to the phones. Philip in St. Louis, Missouri has been holding for quite a while. How you doing, Philip? 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 He's not there. You can call back. Let's go to Chiffon in Hazelhead, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Chiffon.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I want you to snuggle up close to me. I love you so much.
Well, I'll do my best, but I do. You do understand I am married, Chiffon.
Well, of course. And I have a little thing that I just wanted to say. Like when you were preggers with your wife, I had posted on the Randy Rhodes message board that I was going to make a baby blanket for you guys, and I never did. So
well,
please forgive me.
I do forgive you. That's all right. My baby has plenty of blankets. She's got plenty of grandparents, and we were fortunate enough to have actually a lot of friends of Nikki's who have had daughters. So
oh,
we just get boxes of clothes from people.
Oh, good. So anyway, I have a comment about McCain.
Oh, please.
Anyway, you know, he's really on record as disavowing or not acknowledging post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, he really laid into, you know, Vietnam vets and basically called them scumbags. So, you know, why would anybody who's in the military who wants support for military and their family even consider voting for McCain?
This guy has voted against so many veterans bills. It's unbelievable. It really is. There really, I mean, you know, I haven't read Cliff's book yet, so I don't know. But someone really could delve into this guy's psychological issues. And
yeah.
He does clearly have some resent. And he has resent, I think, for people. I mean, you have a situation now where the military is saying that 27% of non-commissioned officers on their third or fourth tour exhibited PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have a guy in office, I don't think he's ever going to get there, but who wants to be in office and is doing it on, you know, have you seen the commercials where he sort of compares himself to Churchill and
mm-hmm.
tries to bring up this great, you know, the greatest generation? I really do think, and I actually have the video now, and I'm starting to work on a video for it, but of when he answered this question about when he broke under torture.
And I have a question about that.
Please do.
My question, because, you know, he was an esteemed military person, and, you know, because of his family's rank in the military.
Right.
And he was given the option to go home.
Right.
So he said, no, I don't want to do that because, like, I'll be a scumbag and I will not, like, have a life if I do that.
He was given the opportunity to jump ahead in the line to go home, and he didn't do it.
But I wonder. So then, like, because he had the prestige in the first place, you know, like, was it really so bad?
Oh, I think it was.
Okay.
I think it was.
Okay.
So. They beat him. They tortured him.
Okay.
But what is interesting that I saw in this the 60 Minutes thing is that there was a guy who saved his life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
He admits saved his life.
Okay.
And when that guy was offered the opportunity to go home,
mm-hmm.
Maybe to jump the line, I'm not sure, the guy took it.
Uh-huh.
And McCain to this day has refused to talk to that guy who saved his life. Now, here's a man who's obviously holding a grudge, but I think that there is something in his mind
mm-hmm.
where he does have a certain amount of resent
mm-hmm.
for anyone who was weak in his eyes.
Yes, or who, like, was said that the war was not the right thing.
Yes, and I think, you know, it goes beyond that too, Chiffon, and I appreciate the phone call. I think that, you know, I think the reason why he turned on his wife and called her a trollop, essentially calling her a prostitute, and referred to her as you rhymes with punt, is because of the horrible humiliation that he feels. Now, I'm not saying he should. But I'm talking about this guy who likes to consider himself, right, a real man, hates the fact that he broke under torture, gave a false confession, then goes on to allow CIA to torture. But hates the fact, you know, when you read this thing, when you see him say this, he feels guilty that he broke under torture. I think the reason why he hates his wife, that's really, you know, or this anger. I don't know that he hates his wife, but when you say that to your wife in front of other people too, I mean, you have a tremendous amount of anger towards that person. And I think it's because he knows he would be nothing without her. I think it's because John McCain knows that if it wasn't for her and her family's millions upon millions of houses, dollars. They have something like 8 houses. Where is that? I just saw that today. She owns 8 houses. They're all in her name. She made him sign a prenup. Good for her. But I think that's where a lot of his anger comes from. You know, on some level, it's humiliating for him. Joanne, listening on KPHX, flagship station in Nova M. Welcome to the program, Joanne. Joanne, are you there?
Joanne?
Joanne.
This is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Great. I've been listening and listening, and there were a few points I had to make. I heard earlier today on the station that it may not just be post-traumatic stress, that people who knew him in school, he went to school, I'm in Phoenix, he went to school here, he was like this all his life. He has always been explosive and quick-tempered. There's something else wrong. I think the American people need to demand some kind of a psychological profile on this guy.
He should release his medical records, and he shouldn't keep stalling. Let's see him.
I think he's hiding something. I have a friend who's a psychologist, and she worked her way through college as a waitress, and they were, Mr. and Mrs. McCain were staying at a resort, and she was their waitress. And Cindy had 4 glasses of wine before 11 o'clock in the morning. She said, but it's really no wonder that she's drinking and drugging the way she is, because he has, it's pretty well known in that community, the psychology people, that she's an abused wife.
Well, now, you know, I mean, Joanne, you can't, you know, and that's a secondhand story, and I don't know. I obviously can't speak to the validity of that, and I don't know that, you know, you can really know what's going on in this guy's mind. You know, there's just no way for us to know, and I don't even know if I was a certified psychotherapist that you could tell if you're not sitting down with this person. But saying this to your wife is not indicative of good things. I don't feel like I need to be a professional to make that determination. Rob in Sacramento, welcome to the program, Rob.
Hello, Sam. How are you, sir?
Good. How you doing?
Not very well, sir. I'm jonesing, man, for the Nova M radio station, the show out here in Sacramento. They pulled you guys.
On KSAC. Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm so sick of it. You know, you cannot find nothing on the AM dial out here that's informative. You know, you guys kind of, you contributed to me being lazy. You know, I got all my information, most of, not all of it, but most of my information from you guys, and I would just, I am so aggravated. I got the station that they had you guys on, they play 24/7 this religious music. I mean, if these people who call themselves religious people are really seeking the truth, then why aren't they listening to what you guys have to say?
Oh, that's a good point, Rob. I mean, gospel music, you know, I don't know. I mean,
what are you going to do, sing themselves to heaven? Come on. I tell you, I really miss you guys' show out here, and I hope that I can, I'm just going to keep surfing the dial out here. I know there's other ways of getting a hold of you guys, but, man, God bless you guys for the work you're doing, and I hope to hear from you guys on a regular basis here in Sacramento soon again.
Well, I hope you do too, Rob. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Merrill in Miami, WINZ. Wins.
Are you calling for Merrill?
That's right, Merrill. How are you?
That's me. I'm fine. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing great.
Great. Well, my dad's a World War II vet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that when the guys first came over there, he said after a day you could take a look in their eyes and you could see that they were already gone. And you think about John McCain being so anti-vet, and these guys, I mean, you think about all the cases of PTSD from World War II, and you think about them going into this land in Vietnam and just not knowing where they were and all the gunfire.
Yep.
And, you know, all the cases that happened from the beginning, let alone at the end of their shifts over there. You know, yep. And then coming back to the country, you know, like, and just not knowing where they were anymore.
Well, of course. I mean, you can't put people, you cannot expect to put people in that type of situation where they're literally fighting for their lives on a daily basis and they don't know when they're going to be fighting for their lives. They don't know if today is going to be my last day or today is just nothing's going to happen. You can't put them in that situation and expect they're going to come out and not be, at the very least, incredibly different, that they have to shut down parts of their brain to survive through something like that. And that's, I think, in the best-case scenario.
Of course. And you're talking about people coming out of their lives with their parents, coming out of their lives being, you know, taken care of,
right,
or, you know, coming out of college, or just being kids, you know, and then all of a sudden being shot at?
Yep. Well, Meryl, I appreciate the phone call. I mean, the bottom line here is, you can never know what's going on in a person's mind, but, man, I'd like to see what happens if somebody asks him about this. See what color face John McCain's face turns. See what he does to that person. Yeah, Billy's making the face on the Sammy cam right now. We're going to take a break. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. It's 46 after. I'll be right back. Take more calls. 800-989-1480. Conservatives are welcome. Be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Mark Maron will be filling in for Mike, I believe, the rest of this week. I'm not 100% sure. Not Friday? Oh, P. Werby on Friday? So there you have it. Mike is on vacation, folks. I can assure you, he is on vacation. Nothing else to see here, folks. Nothing. Just keep moving along. Let's go to Philip in St. Louis. Philip, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, hosted
Hi, Sam.
By Sam Cedar, just because Mike is on vacation, Philip.
Hi, Sam. Sorry, my phone cut out on you earlier.
Oh, no problem.
I wanted to respond to your libertarian earlier. I think it's...
Yeah, let me just remind people who you're talking about. We had a libertarian call the last hour basically say we shouldn't be paying taxes and talking about the Boston Tea Party and somehow, I don't know, they're going to come out of the woodwork with this HBO John Adams on there, and they're not going to get the gist that, like, we don't have horses and buggies anymore, folks. You got to pay your taxes. Am I right, Philip?
Yeah, well, I'm amazed with the indignation over money for Katrina, but they'll ignore the $2 trillion that's missing from the Pentagon budget, or they'll get mad about children's health care, but they don't care about the billions that are overcharged by, you know, the contractors in Iraq, or they'll throw a fit about public education, but they don't care about the hundreds of billions of dollars we're paying the corporations to send their jobs overseas. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, Philip, I'm sure you must be aware of the huge outcry from conservatives about the taxpayer-backed, and we could end up on the hook for $29 billion. I'm sure you've heard about their massive, massive rallies they've had against this thing, and I'm sure you've read all the newspaper articles written by these conservative libertarians about how horrible it is that we are allowing Bear Stearns.
I'm losing track of what's happening with Britney Spears. I'm hearing about it so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I'm gonna let you go.
All right, I appreciate the call, Philip. Phone not in great shape, Philip's phone. I mean, that's the way it works with this Bear Stearns thing, folks. Privatize the profits, socialize the costs, socialize the risk. We see this not just, when it comes to Bear Stearns. We see this all the time. You know, when you talk about companies that are violating environmental regulations, that's all they're doing. They're basically reaping profits, and we pay the price. Another quick one here. We got time for Bob in West Virginia. Bob, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Sam Cedar filling in.
Hey, Sam, what's up?
How you doing, Bob?
This is Bob from below.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Hey, it's been going great, man. Hey, and what's the topic at hand?
What's the topic at hand?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to definitely cut into your ability to comment on it, Bob.
Well, I tell you what. The one thing that's bothering me is this McCain using Condi as vice president. I mean, what has Condi done? She has done nothing as far as the Palestine-Israel peace process. I mean, she's just been a complete failure.
No, Bob, I would have to agree with you. You're talking, Condi Rice is probably going to go down as one of the least successful national security advisors and State Department reps. And, you know, I don't think that's going anywhere. I think the McCain people are floating that to, you know, make it look like that he's open to the idea of a black woman serving as VP. But let's be honest, folks. The Republicans are never, never going to run Condi Rice in the VP spot. I'm sorry. This is just a game they're playing so that you think, hey, John McCain, he's actually not the type of guy who would call his wife a trollop and call her a you punt. Yeah, maybe he's not the type of guy who would vote continuously and over and over and over again, well into the 80s, against making Martin Luther King Day a national holiday and tried to fight it in his own state. That's why you're hearing Condi Rice's name bandied around right now. And anybody who delivers that message, like Dan Senor on Meet the Press or This Week or wherever it was, shill. Understand they are shills. I will be named his vice presidential candidate before Condi Rice. I can assure you of that. Ian, Billy, everybody at Novam Radio, it's always a pleasure. I love you guys. You run a very tight ship. Mike, Kathy, Molly, thank you so much. I don't know if Molly really had anything to do with it, but Kathy and Mike probably had a say. Always a pleasure. Thanks, folks. Mark Maron for the rest of this week. Peter Werby on Friday, filling in for Mike Malloy while he's on vacation. Have a good one.